Next, old mole Tom Becker reads on making rules on trade that are equitable and good for working people.
Thank you, Bill. Long ago in the 1960s, when I was an economics major in college, it was commonly accepted that trade barriers such as tariffs and quotas were bad, and free trade was an unequivocal good, in that it led to the most efficient allocation of resources. That debate continues. Never mentioned in economic theory, however, was its impact on people's lives, especially the working class, and nobody at the time had ever heard of the threat of climate change. The article I'm about to read proposes an alternate to the free trade versus protectionism debate, a position which the author terms progressive internationalism. The article is entitled On Trade. Our choices aren't only xenophobic nationalism or neoliberal globalization, and is by Leon Fink, distinguished professor of history at the University of Illinois at Chicago and editor of the journal Labor, Studies in Working Class History of the Americas. Few issues are receiving more insipid and thus more harmful treatment in our public discourse than world trade. Along with immigration, free trade is now the formal symbol of a supposed either-or choice between globalism and nationalism. Globalists generally hail the liberal marketplace as the engine of economic prosperity and assail its critics as uneducated and irrational isolationists, while nationalists instinctively identify trade with economic decline, or at least the loss of good working class jobs, rising inequality, and a general loss of control over the future. As one CNN commentator put it, after Britain voted to leave the EU, the new politics of our age will not be left versus right, but open versus closed. This framework risks closing off our best possibilities for building a progressive economic future. We need a new paradigm. The wartime Bretton Woods Agreement, together with the immediate post-war Marshall Plan, integrated the Western plus Japanese economies on the basis of stable currencies, expanding markets, and political democracy. After the catastrophe of Nazi-era cartels and hypernationalism, including the United States' own notorious Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, which set barriers of up to 59% on imported goods, Western workers, generally well-organized in trade unions, felt as much stake in the rising tide of economic growth as did their bosses. A slick pamphlet designed for mass distribution by the American Federation of Labor in 1947 heralded the promise of Bretton Woods, 5 million jobs in world trade. In an age of transportation and communication revolutions, geography proved less and less a haven for high-cost home producers against distant competitors, and to be sure, not even that distant. By the NAFTA era of the mid-1990s, U.S. workers were making 10 times the average wage of their Mexican counterparts. If placed in direct competition, how could they possibly hold on to their jobs? The question remains, however, how best to tackle the negative effects of globalization without upsetting the entire apple cart of world trade. Oddly, most other problems of world economic integration have found solutions through compromise, whereas trade has remained the province of extreme either-or. In finance and currency crisis, for example, the International Monetary Fund and or World Bank regularly intervened to protect national currencies from abrupt freefalls. In oceanic mining and fishing, world agreements limit territorial overreach to prevent the exhaustion of vital resources or whole species. However inadequately, even in the climate crisis, world powers have accepted the principle of limits and the need to discipline fuel consumption and carbon output. Yet there is no such movement towards an adoption of mutually agreed international principles on matters of trade. In a politically suffocating manner, one is either pro-free trade, such as most big business and most Clinton, Bush, Obama policies, anti-free trade, Donald Trump with a proposed 45% tariff on China, or stumbling in the middle, pro-then-anti-TPP Hillary Clinton. The Trans-Pacific Partnership, in particular, attempts to overcome first-world skepticism with side agreements on labor affecting workers in Vietnam, Malaysia, and Brunei, but the record of enforcement for such guarantees is spotty at best. The options here presented are silly, self-defeating set of choices, and one that both workers and consumers in the United States and Europe need quickly to transcend. Interestingly, as early as the time of Bretton Woods, there were voices calling for a better international architecture when it came to world economic integration. The left of the Center Congress of International Organizations even got initial support from the administration of Harry Truman for the creation of an international trade organization alongside the IMF that would coordinate further bilateral or international trade openings with tangible commitments regarding employment, development, and investment. Hopes for the ITO collapsed when conservative Republicans captured the Congress in 1950. No similar idea has been seriously considered since. In the spirit of the ITO, we need to return to the quest for a new world order as undertaken in Bretton Woods, but this time with a more encompassing agenda. Not just financial stability, but regulations of trade and debt must be on the agenda. Global exchanges should yield equitable employment as well as enhanced bottom lines. Absent a movement towards what we might call progressive internationalism, we are forced to choose between globalists, heedless of the consequences of development for those outside the professional and financial classes, or nationalists, suspicious and hostile towards the world beyond our borders. Neither posture holds out much prospect for economic renewal, either at home or abroad. That was an article by Lynn Fink entitled On Trade, Our Choices Aren't Only Xenophobic Nationalism or Neoliberal Globalization. The article can be found on the In These Times webpage.